Welcome to the Bowhunter Podcast. All bow hunting, all the time. Now, here's your host, Associate Editor Mark Demko.
So, hey, everybody. Welcome to the Bowhunter Podcast, presented by Lancaster Archery Supply. You know, for all your bow hunting needs, visit LancasterArchery.com. We've got the gear. We've got the knowledge. We've got the passion. So, you know, for everybody who listens to the Bowhunter Podcast, they know I've been archery hunting for 3 decades. I started in my early 20s. One thing I've never done, and I set it as a goal this year, is to get into a tree saddle and kill a white-tailed deer out of a saddle. I've just never done it. I know that it's crazy popular. And so we wanted to do an episode about coming at this from the newbie perspective. I'm going to get into a saddle this fall, but we wanted to have the experts in the industry on to help me get started, and by extension, to help everybody who's listening to this episode get started with tree saddle hunting. It can certainly be a bit overwhelming, from the equipment to how you do everything properly. So I want to introduce Carl Kasuth. He's the chief designer for Tethered, and Sean Ferguson, who's the co-owner of Trophy Line. These guys have been doing it for years, and they're going to walk us through this process. Gentlemen, welcome to the Bowhunter Podcast.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having us on. Appreciate it.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. So we're going to jump right into this, you know, and you know, when I thought about saddle hunting this year, the first thing I thought is, my gosh, there's so much you got to know. So, Carl, let's start with you. If somebody's never done it, what are the major considerations they need to think about if they want to make themselves more mobile in the woods and field this year? If they want to jump into a saddle, I mean, certainly, you know, you need a saddle. You need some kind of climbing aid, probably a platform. But there's so much more that goes into it, isn't there?
Yeah, there's I would say that yard time, that backyard time, is probably the biggest consideration out there. You know, like Sean alluded to earlier before we kick this thing off, Sean and I deal with this hundreds of times a year with customers and, you know, potential saddle hunters at all the retail shows and different events that we go to. So it's kind of old hat for us. It's almost like breathing for us, but there's a little bit of a learning curve with saddle hunting that differs from your traditional elevated hunting methods, you know, your tree stands and your lock-ons. You know, you go buy a tree stand, a lock-on, ladder stand, whatever it is, from a big box store. There's one way to use it. You pull it out of the box, you put it on the tree, and you sit in it or you stand in it, and that's it. And you're done. But as we all know by now, those do have limitations. So the trade-off with the saddle system is, you have to put a little bit of effort in it because there is a little bit of a learning curve. Some people are naturals. They can hop into any saddle made. I don't care whose brand it is or what style it is, and basically do an all-day sit and be perfectly fine. And then others have to get into what we call saddle shape. And that is a very real thing. And it just depends on your body type, you know, your bone structure, different things. Some people are very comfortable at heights. Some people are not. Some people will immediately fight the equipment because they have to learn to trust it. And that's where, you know, doing that backyard, hanging a foot off the ground, using your bow, a block 2 yards away, go through the motions. You want it close, you know, 2 yards or so, because you want to simulate being at hunting height as if you were up in the tree. So you're going to master all those shots, your strong side shots and your weak side shots, and just moving around on the platform, learning to trust the gear, learning to trust the equipment, because people are out of their elements with this, and that's awesome and that's okay. But you have to put in that time to become very comfortable and very proficient before you ever even go up to hunting height. And if you do that, and the learning curve is not long, it really isn't. It doesn't take a long time for this to happen. You'll go out and practice one day, maybe after, you know, 4 or 5 sessions, and you'll slip your saddle on and you'll clip into your carabiners and you'll close those gates. And all of a sudden it's like putting on your favorite ball glove. It just fits and everything just clicks and goes right into place. And the main thing is, you're accomplishing this, you know, as far as utilizing the ropes and the saddle and the platform before you ever even start climbing. And then, Sean, he could touch on, climbing a little bit, but it's just all about going through those motions and to where it's become second nature for you. And again, it's not a huge learning curve, but there is a little bit of effort that the individual has to put into it to really get all the benefits that saddle hunting has to offer.
I think you hit the nail on the head with the trust your product, right? Because especially for somebody coming over from a tree stand, you're used to standing on something that's perfectly solid right under your feet. You're standing vertical, right? Now we're asking you to hang on the edge, right? And utilize the shape of that platform. And because once you get past what we call the pucker moment of hanging off that side, and trusting your gear, you can literally open horizon, right? And utilize the outer edge of that platform and be able to move around. Because ultimately that's what it is, right? You have more mobility, you can get into different trees, but it all comes down to trusting it. And like Carl said, it's practice. We have a lot of people that always call us that, bought it and, first time they're using it is in the dark and then they call us when they get back home and they're like, man, I'm not sure if this thing's for me. And like, you start talking to them, you're like, well, you didn't practice. Right. So yeah, the more time you get to put in on the front end of it will pay off big time when it's go time during the hunting season.
Yeah. Thank you both for that. And I think, talking about the practice and getting the experience under your belt and the different shooting situations, let's step back one step. You want to buy a saddle. What are the things you want to look for when you're thinking about investing in a saddle and saddle setup? Obviously, there's a lot of different things you need to consider from comfort and versatility. So if you're going online, visiting one of your websites, or you're going into the store, what do you want to look for your first saddle?
Great question. The beauty of it today is there's lots of choices. You back up 3 years ago, 4 years ago, there's only a couple of us. And so it's a great time to, want to dive into it. And I always, it's one thing to buy it off online, just like anything, right? Everybody wants to touch and feel it, but this time of year, there's a lot of shows going on across the country. And so head to like a Harrisburg show or something like that, where there's a number of us that are there, and to try them, because, it's a product that you wrap around your core. Everybody's built different, all saddles are built different, but a lot of great saddles out there, which is great because it gives you a lot of options. But I tell people, try them out, get to a place that get to a local dealer or a sportsman show where you can sit in it, and even for a few minutes, you'll know right away. Because like I said, they're all built different, whether they're wider, they're taller. Some give you better lower back support, some cup under your butt better. And then even at that point, then there's, the saddles today are, you can dial them in, whether you wear it higher, you wear it lower. And there's so many adjustments on it. And usually at these shows, it doesn't matter who you go see, they can help you figure that out and dial that in. So from that standpoint, my recommendation is always to try it, right? You're not going to buy a brand new car without test driving it, right? And I feel like a saddle's, very comparable to that. And I know a lot of us obviously do sales online and we do returns. And so, you can always go that route if you don't have a place by you. But if you do, go to your local dealer, go to your local pro shop and try them on, because it's they're all going to fit slightly different and look a little bit different and give you, at the end of the day, it gives you the same basic thing. It's going to hang you from the side of the tree, but it also depends if you do 2 to 3 hour hunts or you want to hunt all day, and some are better than others. So again, it's all about being able to go and try a couple different ones out.
And I have to say, you talked about trying them on in person, and whether we go to the archery trade show, which is for the industry, or you go to the Great American Outdoor Show in Harrisburg, the booths for your companies are usually mobbed with people, and the technology that goes into saddles, the design, the infrastructure is changing so rapidly. Carl, what are some of the questions that you get when people walk up to your booth? I'm sure you get a ton of questions, but are there some basic themes or concerns that bow hunters have?
Honestly, at this point, whenever somebody comes up to the booth at any show, and I don't want to forget that about the Mobile Hunter Expos that are coming up this summer too. You know, Harrisburg's kind of passed, but we have there's three or four Mobile Hunter Expos that are coming now, throughout this year and a couple others. So keep those on your radar, everybody, because those are going to be great places, because that's our people. That is the entire mobile hunting community. But I think the good thing is, and Sean can probably attest to this as well, companies like Tethered and Trophy Line and a few others, we've been out in the wild for a few years now, so to speak. And I still firmly believe that word of mouth advertising is one of the best that there is, especially in this space, because, you know, I'm hunting out of a tree stand and my two buddies are hunting out of saddles. And oh, by the way, they have two different brand saddles. I can grab one and put it on. A lot of our testing, or a lot of our, you know, people figuring out which saddles they want, what kind, whether it's a two panel, single panel, expanding body, whatever it is. A lot of them already have an idea before they even come to us, because we always hear the story, my buddy has one, or my cousin has one. And so that's helped a lot as far as people kind of already knowing what kind of saddle they want. Now, granted, we will have some people come in and they are dead set on a very specific saddle because, enter name here, where's this type of saddle? So they want to run that type of saddle. And a lot of times they're exactly right, but then a lot of times they leave with a completely different kit than what they thought they needed. And it's because, like Sean said, at the end of the day, they all do the exact same thing. They're more efficient and kill more critters hanging from the side of the tree. But first and foremost, comfort is extremely subjective. What I perceive as comfort, somebody else may hate. I love more of a minimalist style saddle. Pretty skinny, pretty narrow in the hips. I like high speed, low drag. That's the way I'm wound. That's what I've always liked. But there's other people who they want the biggest, most comfortable thing they can get their hands on. And so again, comfort is very subjective. So knowing your body type helps. And biomechanics is a big thing, a big, big thing. You'd be very surprised at some of the most muscle-bound specimens, quote-unquote, that you would see at a show, who have no idea how to operate their bodies. They look like octopus out of water hanging from the top of a tree. And then you'll take people that you don't even expect. It would be good in the saddle, and they nail it just right away. They nail it. So there's things that come into play, but the main thing to know is that everybody's different, and you got to know yourself a little bit, you know, before you go jumping in head first. But I think that biomechanics is a very, very big thing, because it will surprise a lot of people. I've seen a lot of gym rats out there, you know, who can move those gym weights around, but they can't do functional stuff. And I the more functional you are, the better you're going to be in a saddle.
That's such great, a huge point. I have to ask you, what are some conditioning things you think people should do if they're getting ready to saddle hunt? And I'd like to hear from both of you on that. There's obviously certain things you can do as far as developing your skills, but also getting in the right shape to maybe go into a saddle and hunt successfully.
Nothing replaces doing it, period. Yeah. You can do crunches and you can do all these different things. But the cool thing, like I mentioned before, is you can do this a foot off the ground. But nothing, it's like golf. I hate golf, by the way. But when I do play golf,
me too.
The next day, I realize I have muscles that I never knew existed, and they hurt. You know, saddle hunting is kind of the same way. You're going to utilize different muscles that you just didn't really, you've never used before, but there's no replacement for doing it.
Yeah, you're spot on. It's funny because thank God show season is right after hunting season, because, you know, the shows were hanging for hours, you know, in the tree, you know, for days on end. And, you know, if we started cold right into show season, it would, we'd probably be a little sore, you know, even for us that have been doing it for a while. Okay, you know, right away when you start practicing it, your lower back might be a little sore, your shoulders, you name it, your legs, your calves, it's you'll realize the muscles that you haven't been utilizing. And well, the first time you saddle hunt. But like Carl said, there's guys that it just clicks. I mean, you know, from the time they walk into the booth to the time they leave, they're already good. And then there's other guys that just need to work on it, you know, and spending that time in the backyard, a foot off the ground, goes a long way.
Yeah. And thank you for that. And certainly, you know, you talk about the saddle and practice, but that's just one of the components you need to get up a tree. Sean, talk a little bit about maybe the climbing aids and sticks and the considerations that go into that and the platform. And Carl, we're going to get to you on that too, but there's a lot of factors that go into that to help reduce, you know, foot fatigue, you know, making it easier to get up to the tree when you're using your climbing stick or your aiders. You know, some people like the one stick. There's a lot of things that go into that. So I'll stop talking. I'd love to hear from both of you what you think people need to think about as far as their climbing aids and their platforms.
Sure. I'll talk from the stick side of it. I'll let Carl talk from the one sticking side of it, because I know he does that. You know, at the end of the day, you got to find some way to get up. So, and there's multitudes of ways of doing that. Majority of the people utilize climbing sticks. You know, back in the day, you know, guys were using full 20-foot sticks or, you know, 3-foot sticks and doing them in sections. And now it's all about, you know, bigger, stronger, faster, and leaner. And that's the same for sticks themselves. So most of the stuff are mini. So, you know, within around the 17-inch mark. And everyone wants to see how high can you get, you know, with those mini sticks. And so there's many different ways of doing it, whether you're carrying 3 sticks, 4 sticks, 5 sticks, you know, or you have the ability to add aiders to them, which is basically a rope step attached to the stick. And some people utilize it just on the first stick or possibly put it on all 4, you know. So, but at the end of the day, it is again where your practice comes in place, regardless of what style you use, you know, especially if you got 4 sticks, you have to come up with some type of routine. Because I tell everybody, the first time you do it, say you have 4 sticks in your saddle and a couple aiders, it's probably going to take you half an hour, maybe longer, you know, until you get a routine down, you know, on how you put the first one on and how you're carrying the other 3 with you and how easy it is to get off of, you know, off your pack and put on the tree and how you wrap it around the tree and lock it down. You know, you can easily take that time down to 10 minutes or less, you know, once you get that system down. But it's whatever way you go, whether it's climbing sticks or one sticking, Carl will talk about here in a second. It's really knowing it and getting the system down and knowing your product. Because once you do it a handful of times, you can be pretty quick. But my biggest thing is we always discuss is making sure, regardless of how you do it, is still take your time, right? There's no rush, right? Because a lot of guys, as soon as they get to the bottom of the tree, they want to be up as fast as you can. But doing so, you want to make sure you do it in the safest manner possible. And that's one thing I love about saddle hunting is when used properly, you're connected to the tree 100% of the time, right? If you're using climbing sticks, you get a lineman's rope, you're moving a lineman's rope as you go. You know, you get to the top, you set your platform, you tie into your tether before you disconnect your lineman, you know, shift your weight and go from there. And then you do the reverse going back down. And that's kind of the beauty of saddle hunting from my aspect of it. And whether you're newbie or a younger person or somebody that's been doing it for a long time. So.
Carl, did you want to add anything? And certainly I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about the one sticking. But I mean, like I said, there's so many things that go into it. It's not as simple as going and buying something online or.
It'd be a little more difficult for a newbie.
What's that, Sean?
I said it might be a little more difficult for a newbie, but I've seen guys take, get it quick, again, it's all about practice.
Yeah. I would say as far as the sticks go, that's my recommendation to anybody starting out is start with sticks. I think, the climbing method rabbit, you can go a long way down that thing. And like Sean said, I'm a single stick climber. So, it's extremely minimalist, but it's extremely efficient for me. I've got a little modified one stick. It's 12 inches long with a 3-step Amsteel aider on it. And, 30 foot of an 8mm rope with a rappelling device. And I've been using it for 3.5 years. So, it is my climbing method. You'll never see me on a set of sticks unless I have a cameraman with me. That's pretty much, I just single stick and that's it. But, having said that, anybody that's starting out, I would 100% just recommend just your basic sticks. Learn the basics of it. And if you want to go single stick later on, you just grab one of the sticks that you already own and you can kind of modify it or leave it how it is. And you can, get the couple extra components that you need. But the main thing is to be safe and to kind of piggyback on what Sean said about the safety side of saddle hunting is, that's one thing I love about my single sticking method. Let's just say I'm climbing a straight tree with no branches. It's rare, but if I am, I'm climbing on the same rope, I'm hunting off of the same rope, and I'm rappelling off of that same rope. So I don't even have to do any rope transfers. I'm just on the one main line. So I do like that part of it. But again, if I'm going around tree branches and stuff like that, I want to pull out my lineman's rope and be safe and be attached all the time. And that is the huge benefit of saddle hunting. One analogy I use at shows and stuff, explaining to people about the safety aspects of a saddle versus any tree stand is that if you're wearing a tree stand harness, like you should, it will save you if you fall. But it's going to hurt like hell because there's slack in that system and it's going to hurt. With a saddle, you're under tension all the time. When you're tethered in, you are under tension all the time. The world could crumble at your feet and you're just going to smack against the tree and that's it.
Yeah. And I think that's a huge thing you probably stress to people when they're looking into getting in saddle hunting, because that part can also be a little intimidating and scary. So thank you for covering that. Now, other pieces of equipment that people need to know about if they're going to get into saddle hunting. We really haven't touched on platform, but there's other things that, your connectors, some people wear knee pads, there's a lot of things. What else are the big things you tell people they might want to consider when they're going to get their saddle hunting set up?
You need knee pads or a knee pad, something for your knees. That's an absolute must. If you skimp on that little item when you get into it, you're going to be miserable. Because unless you have like a really good pair of a lot of the hunting companies are making pants that have built-in knee pads. If you've got a pair of those, you'll be fine. But you need to have something to protect your knees because you're not going to want to be leaning all the time, especially if you're on longer hunts during the rut, or something like that. You're going to be you're going to go down to that sitting position and you're going to need something to put your knees against. So, we make, pads that you can connect to the tree just to that are independent of your body And then, you know, we all make knee pads that actually strap to your knees that you can walk in with or put them on at the tree, however you want to do it. So yeah, the knee protection is really important. And then probably, like, if I'm okay for getting my knee pads, but if I forgot my gear hanging strap, we call it a his strap, but if I forgot my gear hanging strap, I'm screwed, because you got to have somewhere to hang your bow, hang your pack, grunt calls, binos, just whatever you might want to put up in your tree office, as I like to call it. You got to have that connection to put all that gear. So for me, my his strap, my gear hanger, that is like got to have.
Yeah. And Sean, I don't know if there's anything you want to add to that, but I certainly
probably other questions. Just a couple probably other key items. A lot of people go to, especially if you hunt all day, is some type of back pad, back rest of some sort. You can add to the comfort side of it, and then some type of, you know, pack system or even pouch system. Some guys like to wear everything on their saddle themselves and put it all in the pouches, and others will carry a pack of some sort. And kind of back to Carl's point, the knee thing is extremely important, you know, and I know a lot of guys will actually, you know, even take their backpack and hang it in front of them, put their knees against it. So if they don't have knee pads or a regular pad, they can utilize that as two purpose, but I'm with him. You can forget all that other stuff, but if you don't get a thing to hang your bow from, it's going to be a long day. It's going to be a long or short day. It depends on how you look at it.
Yeah.
And so that's probably one of the most important parts of how you're going to hang your bow and grunt tube and things like that with you. So,
you know, I got to ask, you know,
one more thing I would
go ahead.
Yeah. One more thing I would add, and this is extremely important, especially for a new saddle hunter, because you may have these or you may not already. Your footwear. So hunting on a platform is completely different than hunting on a flat stand. The long and short of it is the stiffer shank boot or footwear that you have, the more comfortable you're going to be. Because you know, being on the edge of those platforms, now some platforms have angles, others are flat, but either way, you're on a very narrow part of a platform. So, a very stiff shanked boot and you're going to be miles ahead. Do not try to hunt in Crocs or tennis shoes. Even most rubber boots are going to suck because unless they have a steel shank in them. And I always steer people toward those ultra lightweight Western mountain hunting boots. That's all I use for year round. Even late season, I throw some Arctic Shield boot covers over them and go.
Yep, absolutely.
And I'm glad you brought that up. We actually had two footwear companies mentioned to me at the ATA show that they're, you know, looking into making more boots like that are built towards saddle hunting with the stiffer frame and things like that. So I'm glad you brought that up because that's just so important from the foot fatigue perspective and from the performance. So when I heard that from those companies this year, I was like, wow, you know, that's a good thing because, you know, it can be hard, especially the longer you're in the tree and things like that. Now, as far as platform size, you recommend a little bit bigger platform for newbies? What are your thoughts there? I mean, platforms for saddle hunting are a little smaller than obviously a stand-in platform if you're using a climber or a lock-in.
Yeah, that's another rabbit hole you can go down pretty quick, right? You know, and you know, comfort's relative, right? Like Carl said earlier, you know, it depends. Some people, it might depend on the size of their boot. They might like want something a little bit bigger, but you know, at the end of the day, they get to realize that you're utilizing the outer edge. So more than you are standing up on it. And so size definitely matters, right? And a lot of times size matters because depending on the weight guys want to carry, you know, or lack of. It's all relative, you know. There's a lot of guys coming over from, you know, tree stand world, so they might end up with a larger platform just because they're going from a pretty big tree stand, and maybe not want to go down to like a 12 by 12 or 13 by 13 platform right out of the gate. But I think, you know, once they try that bigger one, they'll eventually go to something smaller after they become accustomed to it and practice wise. And they're all over the board too, you know, on different shapes and that's kind of the reason when you look at a tree stand and look at the difference on a platform, right? Cause a lot of people are like, oh, it's a small tree stand. Well, not really, you know, the outer shape is, there's a shape for a reason, you know, cause you have some type of leverage with your boot and on all those angles and nooks and crannies. So you always have some type of leverage on it. So again, size is relative, you know, so it's really going to be a preference on what they want to carry at that point. Cause I know guys that, you know, have 13, 14, 15 size boot that are hunting off a 12x12 platform, you know, and I know guys that are size 8.5 boot and using the biggest platforms out there, you know, and it's just really what you're comfortable with and, you know, what you want to carry into the woods. And again, it's all about practice from that aspect.
And Carl, I don't know if you had anything you wanted to add further to that, but I wanted to give you a chance to touch on the platform.
Yeah, it's Sean pretty much hit it right there. And it's, again, just like comfort is very subjective. That's a very personal thing too, because at the end of the day, they do the exact same thing. It's just, you know, what you're comfortable with and what you're used to. I'll have people come up at shows and hop on a platform. If right away I see a guy's got a size 13 or 14 shoe, I'm probably going to steer him toward an XL just so he's got some more room. Because one thing you have to keep in consideration, you know, a lot of this equipment, you know, either indoors and in controlled temperature environments or during the summer, you want to think ahead about, okay, what am I going to be wearing when the rut comes along? I'm going to be layering up. Am I going to have different boots? Are they going to be bigger boots? You got to think of all that stuff that comes into play too. If you're an individual that's on the fence on like kind of in between sizes, depending on where you live in the country, you need to consider what you're going to be wearing for most of your hunting, you know, especially getting in the late season. If you live in Alabama, hunting down there, probably not a big deal. But if you're up in northern Michigan, you might consider, you know, like even sizing up to a bigger saddle or a bigger platform. But yeah, it's just, it depends on what you want. Some people want to be absolutely as minimal as they possibly can, and they'll go straight for that smaller platform, even if they would probably, you know, be better suited for a bigger one. But one thing I think that is also kind of key on what I've witnessed as far as people choosing how they choose their platform is that I think Sean also alluded to it earlier, people who are coming from the mobile tree stand side of things and jumping into the saddle game, they tend to gravitate toward the XLs more often than not because it's kind of familiar ground to them. It's closer in size to what they're leaving. So it there's that familiarity to that size platform that I think a lot of people are drawn to.
Yeah. Now the other thing we should touch on, you know, when you look at the industry, I have a set of sticks from about 3 years ago. I'd never use them today because there's been this shift towards using better quality, more lightweight materials. And I think everybody knows that, but, you know, and that's across the mobile hunting industry as a whole. But when you're talking about saddle hunting, what are some of the themes that you're seeing, or what are some of the trends that you're seeing when it comes to saddle hunters? I lightweight's one of them. Are there other things that you guys are always focusing on, or that you're hearing from your customers that you'd like to see you incorporate into your products?
Lightweight's probably the biggest, right? It's important to us, but, you know, we kind of look at all the different aspects, right? And, you know, comfort is a huge one. Again, it's subjective, but, you know, you try to, you know, take a lot of the input and make them all down and design some things around that aspect. But lightweight is probably the biggest term that's probably thrown around, and, you know, what's lightweight to somebody? You know, it could be 4 pounds, it could be 6 pounds. You know, but I think the biggest thing too that is the ease of use of your product, right? And it, not being able to like fumble around with it. And how simple can you, once you're at the base of the tree, how simple it is to get to the top of the tree, that comes with practice. But, you know, from a technology standpoint, though, it's, you know, lightweight, strength, stealthiness, right? And, you know, and these ain't even a sexy part of it. You know, we try to look at, and because at the end of the day, you know, people like their stuff to look good, you know, too. And so when we're designing, you know, we take that into account for across all our products, whether it's backpacks or saddles or sticks or platforms. But I know Carl, he's a gizmo gadget guy like me, so we're always tinkering, and I'm sure his basement looks like mine. There's one of, because, you know, we're the only ones that like it, because, you know, and you know, you go down a lot of those rabbit holes of designing product, you know, whether it's ideas that we come up with personally or feedback you hear from a show or somebody sent you an idea or whatever. And you know, it's interesting because, right, we're designing product for masses, you know, at the end of the day. And you know, and it's cool to come up with an idea and see it through its entire process and then to come alive, right? And, you know, nothing's better, and I'm sure Carl can attest to this, nothing's better when you had that idea, went through the long process of testing and sample after sample, and, you know, I'm sure he's like me, I'm never 100% satisfied on that product, but it gets to a point like you got to pull the trigger and go make it. And but there's nothing more satisfying than, you know, somebody coming up to you at the booth and saying, hey man, what you sold me last year, I killed XYZ, you know, and show, and like, that's cool. Like, that's why we do it, you know. You know, and that's what keeps us going. And I'll be honest with you, you know, when our competition, guys like Carl and those guys, they come up with something good, that just pushes us harder to go design something, you know, the next thing, right? It really drives the evolution of this category. And we always love the competition, as Carl and I always discuss.
Yeah. Carl, do you get a lot of suggestions from people who are out using your products? Like, do you get a lot of feedback and people say, hey, you should think about adding X, Y, and Z? I'm not sure how common that is, but it's probably a good question because this part of the industry changes so rapidly.
You have no idea how many direct messages, how many emails, phone calls, text messages. It's nonstop and it's year round. And, you know, everybody thinks they have the next great thing, you know, and, you know, like Sean said, I've got all kinds of one-offs in my shop and in my garage. You know, I hunted out of three different prototype saddles exclusively last year. And, you know, but when you are, what's awesome for one person may not be great for most. So that's where, you know, it does. You really have to kind of go through the weeds and figure out, you know, does this make sense? Does this make sense from the masses as far as a customer's perspective? Will this, ultimately our final question is, will this benefit our customers? Will it make them a better, more efficient saddle hunter? And if the answer is no, you know, we pretty much won't do it. Now, there are trucks. Every year they do a little tweak. Well, Bose, let's talk in the same kind of realm, I guess. Bose is a perfect example. Every year they do just a little bit of something extra. And, you know, it can add a little bit of value to the overall really good product. So, yeah, we all do that to a certain degree. But there's, I think probably the biggest thing I've been approached with is saddle designs from different people. And, you know, some of them I'm like, man, bless your heart. You know, that's kind of about as far as it goes. But this goes back to it just, and it's usually revolved around comfort. You know, I always, this is the most comfortable saddle I've ever seen is this one that I made. And again, it's so subjective. Comfort is very subjective. But kind of my approach to everything saddle hunting is generally the simplest solution is most often the best. That's what I have found, you know, throughout this journey. You know, it's, if you can have fewer set of sticks, if you can have fewer moving parts, you know, have a very streamlined, you know, bomb-proof attachment method, just very simple things. You can design some really, really cool stuff, but it can be, we call it F squared, the fiddle factor. You really got to be leery of that fiddle factor because you can get lost in it. And the next thing you know, you've got a contraption that you need a PhD to operate and it doesn't do anybody any good.
Yeah. Think back to the tree harnesses that come in the tree stands all the time. You know, when you pulled one of those out and you're like, what is this mousetrap, right? You know, yeah. We go the opposite way, right? How do you keep it simple, you know, at the end of the day? But Carl hit the nail on the head. I mean, I could probably show you, you know, three DMs just since we've been on this call about someone sending us ideas on whether it's changing something that we already make or, you know, an idea that they have. But that's what's great too, right? Especially as we're all spending time in the woods, you know, you're always trying to think of how do you make it better? How do you make it stealthier, whatever? And our consumers are no different. You know, we get a lot of great ideas from them to make something we already have a little better, or maybe it's something new, totally outside the box. So it's really weeding through that stuff though.
Yeah. Now we've covered a lot here and we try to keep these segments to about an hour, but I did have two other things I want to touch on with you guys. And the first is, you know, as we've gone and talked about the equipment and sort of the practice and the approach, is there any other things that you think are important for new or aspiring saddle hunters to know that we haven't talked about? Maybe something I haven't even thought of or hasn't come up in the conversation.
From my standpoint is, okay, you got all this new gear. How do you get it into the woods? Right. And you got to come up with some type of system, whether it's, you know, a backpack or a sling pack, or, you know, you fit everything in your pouches on there. You know, it's one thing to get your sticks and your platform and your saddle, but we're all hunters. So, you know, most of us carry probably too much crap in the woods, you know, and in early season is a lot different than late season. So again, it's really coming down to that system of how you're getting that product out into the woods with the least amount of headaches, right? So again, you know, if you're a backpack guy, there's lots of great backpacks out there to make everything fit. If you're a sling pack guy, there's a lot of great sling packs. And so I think that's probably the, you know, one of the most important parts, because a lot of guys are using that now, whether they're using it on tree stands or not. And then again, it's really how simple are they, right, to utilize. If you have a backpack with 40 pockets, you don't know where you put everything. Like, is that really helping you? I don't know, you know, but, you know, that's probably it's the next thing that our consumers are always looking for once they picked out all that, all those products. That's how do they get it out there?
Carl, do you want to add anything there?
Yeah, I think kind of one of my general rules when I'm creating a new product or designing something, going back to my police days and military days, I tried to, everything that we make, I try to make it modular, interactive, and reverse engineered, you know. So you know, like we make a set of suspenders and a yoke, But they come with hardware that if you've got an early saddle of ours or somebody else's saddle, not even a tethered saddle, that may not have like loops to attach them to, well, we put pieces in there that you can make your own, you know. I think being modular with your equipment, and this goes along with kind of like what Sean was saying about packs, you want your gear to work for you throughout the season, from the very early season with the very minimalist loads to the very late season with the heavy loads. You want to be able to, I mean, saddle hunting is, there's no wrong way to do it. As long as you're safe, you know, closing carabiner gates and using your ropes like you're supposed to, you're doing everything safety wise. There's no wrong way to do it. It's the Swiss Army knife method of hunting. It really is, because you can personalize it to you and make it your own. And that is one of the beauties and headaches at the same time, especially for us as designers, is that there's so many good ideas out there that people do. They come to us with at shows, because like Sean said, they're sitting up there in those trees just like we are, and they're mulling things over and they're looking at their gear, and they'll be like, oh yeah, this next hunt, I need to get some stealth strip and wrap around that one stick right there because it made a little ding on the way up the tree. It's just that constant progression, that constant evolution. And that's one of the things that makes it just so damn fun.
Yeah, very well said. And, you know, it is a constant evolutionary process. And thank you guys so much for sharing all of your knowledge, not only as designers, but also what you've learned over the years. The last thing is, your companies, Tethered and Trophy Line, absolutely innovators and leaders in the industry. I'm going to give you a chance to talk about a little bit about what's new for 2024, if you can share at this point. We saw some great things at the archery trade show, but I don't know if you've been rolling those out at the consumer shows. Carl, we'll stick with you and then we'll jump to you, Sean. What are you excited about as far as what's coming out for you this year?
Well, we launched our new grit line at ATA, and it's basically our brick and mortar only line, and it's not direct consumer. The great thing about it is we've designed a very budget friendly saddle system in the grit line. It's going to make it really easy for the retailer to sell it, and it's going to be extremely easy for the consumer to buy it. It's all interactive. You know, we put a lot of thought into it, especially with the new saddle, the workhorse, the kit. You know, it comes with the ropes and, you know, and the recliner. And then right there on the box, it's going to say, you have this. Now you need to look at these. Again, it's all interactive, QR code. You can watch videos and learn how to do it. Because saddle hunting is expensive. You know, it really is. A lot of the gear, and Trophy Line is like us. We have stuff across the spectrum, from our kind of more budget friendly all the way up to the extremely high end. And with grit, we want to get more people into saddle hunting, period. And we wanted that cost of admission to find out, is saddle hunting for me? We wanted that to be as affordable as we could possibly make it. And our response to that new grit line that we launched at ATA has been just phenomenal. We're blown away by it. The retailers are going to love it because it's got the power of Tethered behind it, but they're not having to compete with us on anything because it's its own separate thing. We made it just for them.
Right. And Sean, I know you have some exciting things coming out this year. Can you touch on those a little bit?
Yeah, probably the two biggest things was our Hyperlite series. We had Hyperlite sticks and platform. It's a totally new alloy. It's actually a magnesium alloy that we've been working on for 4 years. Just something totally different outside the box than what's on the market. We were looking just for something that was lighter and stronger, and something totally unique, you know. So had, you know, great launch, and it's been received extremely well. And like Carl said, you know, we carry things from, you know, kind of, you look at a good, better, best standpoint and options and all of those. You know, the Hyperlite is on the, you know, on the best side of it. And you know, it's and not just from the material side of it too, is really the stackability side of our sticks. So again, received extremely well, and looking forward to building on that line. But I just want to add it's a fun time in the saddle industry as a whole. You know, it's as Carl and I've been, we've been doing this for a while now, a lot more players in there, but that's good. It drives competition. It drives innovation, you know, for all of us, which at the end of the day, the consumer makes out, right? They got more options now than ever before. And more innovation than ever before. You know, you look at what we started with and what Tether started with is just basics, right? Really, at the end of the day, we were doing it well before we had the company, right? We were doing it for ourselves. Yeah. And, you know, and it just evolved from there to see where Tether's gone with it from the day they started to what we've done from the day we started. We're night and day from those first starting points. But so really cool to see and really cool to be a part of. You know, at the end of the day, we talk about this on some other podcasts before, we get to play with hunting stuff all day, every day. Don't get me wrong, it feels like a job on certain days, but most of the time it's not. And that's what's great about the hunting industry as a whole. You know, we kind of get to live out our passion and design cool products around it and share that with people. So not a lot of people can say that.
Very, very well said. And Carl, I don't know, before we wrap up, is there anything else you wanted to add?
As far as kind of our jobs, and we're very lucky to be able to do what we do. And I think one thing that does set us apart from the rest of the hunting industry is that by and large, we cater to that public land hunter, to those blue collar guys who don't own a 400 acre mega whitetail farm. Yep. You know, we cater to those guys who've got those 9-to-5ers, those hardworking blue collar people, and who are generally hunting public land. And that's really cool, because just what we do, I think, is so relatable to the majority of the people who are the true hunters out there, who are out there, you know, grinding and getting it done. And it's just really cool to work in that realm and have that daily contact with that type of individual. You know, I really enjoy that a lot.
Awesome. Well, I know you guys have a lot going on, so Carl and Sean, thank you so much. I've learned a lot. Hopefully everybody that listens to the podcast will be able to pick some things up to help them in their saddle hunting journey. Both of your websites, incredible resources, not only for products, but videos and things like that. So check out the Tethered and Trophy Line websites, and we'll see you all next time on the Bowhunter Podcast. Guys, thanks a lot.
Thanks for downloading the Bowhunter Podcast. All bow hunting, all the time. Pick up the latest issue of Bowhunter Magazine on your local newsstand or connect with us online at bowhunter.com.